In my mind, originally, I was thinking a single family home. I've only ever lived in single family homes. I've never lived in a condo type of unit. So that's what I know. And I felt like those would be, well, you can get an IKEA that's a single family home that's very cheap. But I did start looking into condos just because of maintenance. That seems like it would potentially be a better option for a vacation property than a single family home
I
if I'm
mean,
just exclusively using it for me and I don't have somebody else living there.
the IKEAs are cheap on purchase, but yeah, the maintenance
The
costs
maintenance.
will escalate over time. It's very frequently you have to put in the price of the property again just to bring it up to livable standards, and then a few thousand bucks a year, and within a few years you're up to three times the price that you paid for it. So if you're looking for a cheap entry, they're good, but they come with a lot of headaches. Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima, again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over 2 decades now, and for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so welcome back. Just a quick reminder that the spring session of the Japan Real Estate Summit is approaching fast, less than a month to go now, and tickets are selling fast. So all of our speakers and sponsors, Tracy Northcott, Emil Gorgis, Blanca Kobayashi, Chai Kanda, Shumatsu Post and Brett Lee, Matt Ketchum, Mark Drapkin, Ben Tanaka, Alicia Kin Wang, Innovations.com, MailMate, Tatemono IQ, and of course myself, we're all very much looking forward to seeing you with us on the 18th and 19th of April, Saturday and or Sunday, pick or choose your days, at the Pullman Hotel in Tamachi, Tokyo, or online in the streaming room. As a side note, it seems that some of you might have not noticed. So just pointing out that the gala dinner on the first day of the event, Saturday at 6 p.m., that requires a separate ticket. So if you're going to be joining us for dinner, which I'd highly recommend, the Pullman doesn't hold anything back when it comes to meals served, you do need to purchase that ticket separately. It's also on the ticketing page at summit.realestate.jp, which is really where you want to head over to right now. Pause this podcast and go there if you know that you'll be attending the event, but you haven't secured your tickets yet, because again, they are selling fast. There might not be any available if you wait for the last minute. All right, so for today's conversation, this is one with a lovely lady from the US, Annette, who was born and raised in Japan, but then went back to the States with her parents, and she now visits here regularly. So she wants to buy either a holiday home in Iwakuni, which is where she was originally stationed with her parents, which she's going to let friends live in when she's not using, or to potentially purchase an investment property instead and use that income when she visits here. And so we talk about market trends and the effect of foreign investment, why prices are going up, and what incoming foreign investment might potentially have to do with that or not, where to find listings, the ins and outs of owning a house versus a condo unit, and on that topic, how condo management and fees actually work in Japan. We do a few live deals analysis together, so hop over to our YouTube channel if you want to view those while we're going through them, in case you're tuning in audio only via the podcast.
We talk about red flags and other things to watch out for when you're reviewing house and condo listings. What happens when a condo building or a house gets older, zoning, developer buyouts. We then also touch on remote management, what our fees and procedures are for that purpose, and my own personal retirement plans, if that's of interest to anyone, current and past anti-foreigner sentiment, and potential restrictions aimed at non-resident property buyers. We talk about exchange rates, how those affect the purchase and income withdrawal decisions, and how to plan for those in advance more strategically. What are the purchase costs involved, how to calculate investment income and evaluate a deal in advance, what maintenance expenses might look like, especially for older wooden houses, structural inspections, resale options for various types of properties. And then finally, we also talk a bit about the option to buy and register a car to drive in Japan as a non-resident, how to secure a parking space when you're buying a condo unit, and a few other things that we might be able to help her with. So all in all, a very nice conversation with a very nice person, which I've personally really enjoyed talking with. I hope you do as well. Okay, so I read through your email. There was, you're kind of advancing on a few fronts. So maybe give me the background from the get-go again.
Okay. Well, I first found you through Cheap Houses Japan. Mm-hmm. They referred me to you because I was in Japan last year, maybe backing up. So I was born and raised in Japan. I lived there until I was 24. So I go back pretty often to visit friends and family. Well, not actually family, but friends. And so I was there a little over a year ago, and I'm from a really rural part of Japan.
Yeah, Iwakuni. I like Iwakuni. I've got a friend who works there at the Naval Hospital.
At the base. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, that's why I was there, why my parents were there. But, you know, Yamaguchi Prefecture is pretty rural. Like,
very pretty, though.
Maybe for Americans, a good equivalent would be like Alabama. Yeah. It's in the South, it's rural, you know, people from there because of their accent. Yeah. So I didn't think that there would be like Airbnbs in that area. But while I was visiting, we had kind of a housing issue pop up, and I hopped on Airbnb and was like, oh, wow, there actually are a few in this area. So it got me thinking at the time, well, you know, I'd been seeing Cheap Houses Japan for several years and realized like houses are affordable in Japan and maybe I could buy one someday, but having a vacation home seems a little bit bougie, like something only the ultra wealthy can do, and I'm definitely middle class, but
not the ones you see on Cheap Houses Japan. They're not that bougie.
So that's why I was like, well, maybe I could. So when I was there and I saw that there were actually Airbnbs in rural Japan, I was like, well, maybe, you know, I could buy one and then I could, you know, rent it out to cover the costs. Is that doable? So that's what I originally got online looking for, and that's when I posted a question on the Cheap Houses Japan Instagram, and he's like, you should check out Ziv's podcast. Here's a link. So that's when I started listening to you. And then I was like, okay, that's actually maybe not a real doable plan with the laws in Japan, having a vacation.
It's doable, but there are quite a few hurdles to jump through. And depending on location, it might not be logistically doable. If you're saying, I haven't looked at Yamaguchi specifically, but if you're saying there are quite a few Airbnbs there, then there must be some management companies doing it there, and the zoning must allow it.
Yeah,
otherwise they wouldn't be able to. Yeah, they wouldn't be able to list on Airbnb, right?
Right, the zoning has to allow it. So, but you know, now that I understand more of what's involved, I think that's probably not a realistic plan.
It's very hands-on.
Yeah, for sure. So then I was thinking, I still have obviously some friends in the area, and I thought, well, maybe I could get a property that's more like a duplex or, actually I didn't know the word in Japanese, and I was just watching through the most recent summit and somebody said it, I wrote it down,
Nisetai
Jutaku, like the two unit or two family type of home. And I thought, well, if I could get something like that, maybe someone I know who's there could live in it, and that way it wouldn't be empty a lot of the year, you know, and they could get the mail and pay the bills and that sort of thing. But I would definitely have to do a lot of looking for a while, I think, to find that type of property.
And do you have the friend who will be willing to relocate
I
and move
have
there?
a couple. I haven't approached them about it yet, but I think it's a possibility. But in listening to, because I have actually listened to all of your podcasts.
All of the
Going back
that's
to
okay.
2017, I started at the beginning. I've listened all the way through, usually on like my
Oh my God,
commute.
you're a super fan.
I feel much better educated now about everything. And I'm really sad that I couldn't have gotten into the property market back in 2017, because
Those were the
prices
days.
definitely have gone up, right? In just the
Yeah.
last not quite 10 years.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I mean, we've been at it for 14 years now, and we used to get ridiculous prices. And yeah, it's been slowly creeping up since.
Do you think that's like exclusively driven by foreign investment?
No, not at all. Foreign investment accounts for, depending on the year, but somewhere between, I don't know, just under 20 to just over 30 of the investment deals in Japan. The Akiyas and the holiday homes and whatnot are a lot more Japanese oriented. I mean, there's a lot of media hype about it. Foreigners are now aware of it, but it's still a fraction of the market compared to what the domestics are buying.
You think that just the domestic economy is supporting that increase in prices?
Yeah, I mean, since Abe came in back in 2012, everything has been moving up. I mean, barring COVID a few ups and downs, but generally speaking, all of the major cities have been creeping upwards, some of them a lot faster than others. And in the last 4 or 5 years, the rural areas are starting to catch up to some degree. But I mean, still, if you're looking at Yamaguchi, I'd imagine they're pretty cheap, no?
Yeah, I mean, the prices were a little bit higher than I was expecting recently. So I guess a year ago, I got on AkiyaMart with your promo code, just to look at actual properties in the area that I'm looking in and the prices. And yeah, they were a little bit more than I was expecting. I guess having looked at cheap houses in Japan for a while,
Well,
I
he
thought,
hand curates them. He really
yeah,
knows what he's doing.
keep
It's not
finding
like a
deals.
mega website propagator like AkiyaMart, but the ones he puts on his list are very well researched.
Yeah, great deals for sure. Anyway, in listening to what you've had to tell people, I mean, I thinking a single family home. I've only ever lived in single family homes. I've never lived in a condo type of unit, so that's what I know. And I felt like those would be, well, you can get an IKEA that's a single family home that's very cheap. But I did start looking into condos just because of maintenance. That seems like it would potentially be a better option for a vacation property than a single family home
I
if I'm
mean,
just exclusively using it for me and I don't have somebody else living there.
the Akiyas are cheap on purchase, but yeah, the maintenance
The
costs
maintenance.
will escalate over time. It's very frequently you have to put in the price of the property again just to bring it up to livable standards, and then a few thousand bucks a year, and within a few years you're up to three times the price that you paid for it. So if you're looking for a cheap entry, they're good, but they come with a lot of headaches.
I think so. I did look on AkiyaMart for condos just to see, since I especially that I wanted to run them by you because I don't have personal experience owning one. Like I own a single family home here in the US.
Yep.
I've lived in single family homes. I don't have condo experience. It's been interesting listening to some of, I think, like your US viewers talking to about condos because I think the whole like condo association fee concept is quite a bit different in America than it is in Japan. The condo fees in the US have just really skyrocketed in the last few years. And I think I asked AI how much a condo fee in the US is, and the average is $400
Oh,
a
wow.
month.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the average. And most of the people I know are paying at least $400 to $600 a month for their condo fees. And these are places that maybe had under $100 when they moved in not that long ago, 15 years ago or something. So
Right.
it's that scares people about condos here because you have no control. Like the fees just go up. And then they also have one-time assessments. My friend just had to have new balconies put on her building and they assessed them like a $35,000 one-time fee. And you don't have a choice. You have to pay that.
We don't get much of that. But having said that, it obviously depends on the type of building, the location, and the type of the unit. I mean, in central Tokyo, there are definitely condo units that will cost that much, but they're family-sized, kind of, you know, big-ish or wraparound balconies or whatnot. You mentioned just for yourself. So are you looking at a studio or one bedroom kind of thing?
The ones I was looking at were either two or three bedrooms. So my sister and I both like to go back there. We travel together often. I travel, so I'm a flight attendant for work, so I fly free wherever I want to go in the world, which gives me a lot more mobility. So I get back there a lot more often. She has to get time off from work, and so I have a flexible schedule, so I get around a lot more.
I'm looking at the ones that you show. Do you want me to share my screen? We'll have a peek at them together.
I mean, I have them on my computer too, but I can look at them through your screen too.
Well, I mean, we're recording, so let's let other people have a look too. Hang on. Okay, so this is the first one. 27 years. Okay, it's pretty basic.
So that was the nicest one for sure.
Oh, really? Okay, I was going to say it's pretty basic. So now I'm scared of looking at the other ones. Okay.
It was the most expensive one, I think. I love
nice balcony, though.
Yeah, the balconies. I really like light is really important to me. I think that's the most important thing in home buying for me is light.
Yep.
Remind me how many floors it is when they have to install an elevator.
5 and over. So this one would definitely have one. Yeah. I mean, just from the look of the door there, I can say that definitely is a fancy-ish building. The interior hasn't been done in a while, but the building looks okay. So that's about what, 200 US a month ish. It's not bad. Plus the cable TV. Okay.
So that's the reserve fund, and then is
management fee. So the management fee is for ongoing maintenance, but ongoing management of the building. So there'd be six floors. There'll probably be somebody like a building management personnel in the office. That's maybe at least there 2-3 days a week. Mm. And there'd be some vegetation around the building, lights and water to clean the common areas, stuff like that. And then this is what the repair reserve is, what goes into the building's reserve fund, which means that whenever they need to do a big renovation or even the smaller items, then they will be drawing on that reserve fund.
Yeah. So it comes to 27,800.
Yeah, that's just under 200 US, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But otherwise, yeah, looks nice. Okay, and then the other one.
Old one?
Older, yeah.
There's another one that's even older that you're going to be like, way too old.
Well, I mean, this is a little bit over what I know. Oh, nice. You do like light, don't you? Nice. But the interior was done, looks like. At least the bathroom was, yeah.
Yeah.
And the toilet, okay.
Yeah.
Well, the interior is actually looking in better shape, even though it's about 10 years older. With condos, really what you're concerned about is the interior. Once we do due diligence on the building and we figure out if they're managing it properly and they've got enough in reserve funds, then all you need to care about monthly is regularly is the interior. And this one is, okay, a bit cheaper. Now, if you're actively looking at property in Japan, you should check out Akiya Mart. That's AKIYA-Mart, MART, akiyamart.com. It's the Zillow of Japan, built for buyers who are actively hunting for a home in Japan and want a much more Western-style web browsing experience than the typical local Japanese websites. Now, we've got an exclusive 30% off promo code for the Akiya Mart Pro annual plan. That's the one that gives you full access to Airbnb zoning maps, hazard maps, sold data, and over 500,000 listings nationwide at any given time. So if you're serious about buying in Japan and you want an easier way to search, this is the best tool that we know of. So you can use my code ZIV, Z-I-V, at checkout and get 30% off your AkiaMart Pro annual plan at akiamart.com.
So for condos in Japan, do the fees ever include any of the utilities, or are those always all separate?
No, those always separate. In some very old buildings where they don't have individual water meters per unit, there might be a communal water fee.
Okay.
But otherwise, it's all on you or the tenant. If you're renting it out, they sign up for utilities.
Okay. Sometimes in the US, it includes water or something. So it just depends. But
I mean, there are some cases, but the vast majority of them don't. And this one, okay,
this is a single family home.
Yeah. Ah, okay.
One question I had, so on that floor plan, is the green room actually a tatami room?
Yes, or usually the one, that'll usually be
tatami. It doesn't have like the mats, you know, blocked out on that, but does it say 7 mat there? I don't know those kanji.
Nanajo, yeah. You're assuming that I do know the kanji. I appreciate that, but no. I would assume that's Hachijo, Nanajo, Yontengo, yeah. That's the size of the room, but I mean, that's the size of it. The tatamis themselves might be cut in half, like for that little corner there. But yes, that would be a tatami. We're not seeing a photo.
I really do love tatami. I love the smell.
Tatami is one of the easiest thing to install, and it's not that expensive. You can deck out a room. That'll be it. Yeah. Yeah, so that's that little corner, I think, that we saw there. And yeah, that is a tatami. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or that's a half tatami maybe, and then there'll be another 2 halves maybe that we're not seeing in the photo, I'm assuming. Oh, this one's tatami room as well.
Wallpaper issue.
Yeah. Well, again, with houses similar to condos, but here even more so, we're a lot more concerned with the exterior and structural condition than we are with the interior, because that's all cosmetic and quantifiable. Mm-hmm. But the exterior looks to be in decent shape on the underfloor space. Okay, well, this one's young enough that I'm not that concerned about it. You kind of borderline. You might want to still get a structural inspection just in case, but otherwise, you probably got a good 10 years without worrying about too much maintenance and repairs, I'd say. Okay, so it's on a septic tank, which means that you'll be paying something like $300-$400 a year for septic tank maintenance. And I'm not seeing mention of water supply situation, which in, this is where? Yamaguchi? Yanaichi. Okay, so in those areas, we definitely want to check if you're not accidentally on well water, which can be very unreliable. Both with supply, they can just dry out eventually, but also with water quality, which you have to check all the time.
If it's going to say that, where on the listing does it say it?
Like, it's more a case of it not saying that it's on city water supply.
Okay.
So they don't.
So if it had city water, they would say it.
Well, I mean, it really depends on the agent. Some of them are just pumping out 10 properties a week, and they're not too concerned about putting in all the details. Maybe it does have water supply. Some of them will note down well water, or some of them will note down cesspool, pump toilet, but some of them will just. But I mean, this one did mention the septic tank. I don't know. I'm assuming it's on water supply just due to the age of the building, but I don't know. We'll have to check. That's the only caveat that I would have with it. Otherwise, it looks nice and it's not too old. But again, even with a property that doesn't have any major structural issues, you will be looking at something like $1,000-$2,000 on average annual maintenance, yeah? Just because you have the structure. Okay, and then this one. What's this one? Oh, okay, now this is old.
And cheap.
Looks nice, though. Interior's not too bad at all. Okay, the kitchen's not the original. It looks like they might have done the kitchen at least once. It's definitely not 1976 looking, unless they've done a very good job sprucing it up. But
yeah.
Okay, so it looks like it's gone through at least one major... that's pretty ugly. Okay, one major renovation. I'd strip that carpet and put in... if you don't want to do the flooring and you do like tatami, maybe just put in tatami on top of whatever horror is under the carpet there. And then... 9th floor. Yeah, so my main issue with this one... Yeah, this is ridiculously low for a building of this age. That would indicate either that fees are going to probably, I'd say, triple-ish within the next few years, or it's being very badly managed in debt and they just haven't bothered to raise the fees. I don't know. At this age, and also you're looking at this age, you'll have developers, if the area is attractive, you'll eventually have developers sniffing around and trying to buy it off people. How far is it from a station? Tokuyama Station.
Yeah. Minutes. Hopefully. Which, I mean, that's a major station, but.
So developers will try at this age to, if they can build something reasonably, like for example, this one is a 3D case. So let's assume how many units in the building. Doesn't tell us, does it? Maybe down here. 168, okay. So that's a big building. Developers will definitely want to buy that at some point if it's close to a major station. But as opposed to other countries, that's not a super attractive proposition in Japan. They'll usually try to bring the price down as much as they can. And unit owners, especially with, because these are family sized units, which means that most of the owners are probably owners occupiers. As opposed to, like, if it was all studios or one bedrooms, then most of them would be investors, because people who can afford to buy a property would never live in a tiny old studio. So assuming that these are mostly owners occupiers, it means that they're not too property savvy. That's one or maybe one of two properties that they've owned in their lifetime. And Japan is not like it's not like the US or most Western countries where you have a DIY and flipping shows on TV and everyone's doing property as a hobby. It's not the case here. So people would usually not know exactly what's a good or bad price, and developers will very easily tell them that, oh, you're going to be selling this. You're not even going to be able to sell this in 5 years' time. You're lucky we're giving you close to what you purchased it for, kind of thing. So it's not an attractive proposition. It's not like they're going to give you a fancy new unit in a brand new block, right? Also, with current zoning regulations that get stricter over time, if this was built 50 years ago, I'm assuming the building that they're going to be able to construct on it will be a lot smaller than what it is now. So there, the developers will want to save as much as they can, even more, in case of an older building like this. So you probably got 10, 15 years or so, maybe less, before the owner union will start discussing selling it. So for that, and for the fact that building fees are probably going to be rising very rapidly in the next few years, I'm not sure if that's the best use of your money, I guess. But I mean, it's cheap enough that you might just be able to like enjoy it for 10, 15 years and not really care about what happens with it down the track, right?
Yeah. I mean, obviously the cheapest option would be just to stay in Airbnbs when I go visit. Up until now, I've had friends that I could stay with. So I was just there for 2 weeks last month, and some friends' house was vacant because they're in the US. And so I stayed in their house. But that's, the more time that goes past, the more friends move away, and there's less options for that. And also, I mean, I could stay in Airbnb, and if I'm doing that 4 weeks out of the year, it's a, you know, it's several thousand dollars probably. But at the same time, I literally live on the road most of the time. So when I'm on vacation, I'd rather have a place to call my own and not.
Yeah, deck it out, furnish it, make it a home. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Why not?
Right.
Especially if you got, if, like you said, if you've got friends who might be willing to, but if you want them to move in, duplex was because you want them to live there, not like use
it. Right. Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah. If I have a place that's all just for me, like no one else is living there, it's empty a lot of the year, obviously I would make it available to any friends I have that like live in the US now if they want to go back and visit. So I could see potentially somebody maybe going once a year of my, you know, friends group that might want to use it besides
me. Yamaguchi is yes, it's rural, but A, it's very pretty. It's a beautiful area to visit. And secondly, it's like, you know, a couple of hours to Fukuoka, a couple of hours to Osaka. It's not a bad spot.
Anyway, but I did have a list of questions for you.
Go for it.
So my primary and burning question is, if I have a vacation property and I have you managing it for me, so since I can't have a bank account and I need you to pay the bills for me out of a bank account in Japan and all of that, what happens when you retire?
You find another management company.
That's what I'm worried about, is I think your real estate empire is doing pretty well. You might be in a place to retire sooner rather than later.
Empire is a big word. Thank you for that. But we're a small family business. There's about 10 of us when we're fully staffed. I do have another company that's got about five staffers, which is actually the one handling the holiday home management. And that one was only set up 4 years ago with another Japanese, like the real estate company was set up
Is
with my
that
wife.
Nippon Bridge?
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
And Kyoka-san, my partner at Nippon Bridge, this is the first business she's owned. She's younger than me. She's been at it for less than 4 years. I very much doubt she'll be retiring, even if I do, but I really don't have any plans to. I do hope to eventually, take a step back and let other people run the business, but retirement is not in the cards. But also, we're not the only game in town. There'll be other management companies out there.
Okay. I just, don't want to put all my eggs in one basket and then be like, oh.
Well, it's a management basket. It's not like
Yeah.
I mean, there are other management companies out there, really. That shouldn't be an issue. And Japan is becoming more and more international by the year. I like to think that we are a bit more, efficient and less Japanese in the sense that we understand where our buyers and owners are, as opposed to your typical Japanese management company that's maybe doing foreigners on the side kind of thing. But we're good, but we're not the only ones for sure. Now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in Webdesk Solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company Innovatius is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top-of-the-list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off, on again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com, and his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read, detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today.
When I first started looking into this and realizing like the prices have been going up in recent years, I was eager to try and get in before they climbed any more. Now I'm a little bit worried about all of the anti-foreigner sentiment in Japan. And I
You and
was
me
listening
both, yeah.
through I was listening through the recent summit, and I think Emil was the one that mentioned the potential for laws regarding purchasing property. I mean, what are you hearing?
So what they've said today, first off, like to give us some perspective, Japan's the only country that doesn't have, in Asia Pacific, that doesn't have any restrictions on foreign ownership, right? So whatever they do, they're just catching up to the rest of the region. They could do a bunch of things. They said that they're actually looking at what other countries are doing to try and get a better idea of what they want to limit. In most countries, it's either going to be added tax on purchases. Some of them are extreme to the point where they don't allow any foreigner land ownership whatsoever. But A, those are usually not very developed, for first world, like in Australia, Singapore, Hong Kong, the market might be limited to what foreigners can buy, but it's never going to be straight out not doable. Like Australia, for example, only allows foreigners to buy brand new developments. Singapore, 80-something percent of the market is HDB, which is only available to Singaporeans, but foreigners can buy into the other 20%. Japan, I don't see Japan being, again, a first world developed country. I don't see it suddenly kicking out everybody who already has land ownership. If anything, I think they will limit the places or the types of properties that you can buy is my idea of a worst case scenario. And also they're supposedly trying to prevent a bubble, but any bubble in Japan is really at the moment limited to Tokyo, Niseko, maybe super central Osaka. I wouldn't call Osaka bubble territory yet. So I mean, I don't know. They're a more nationalist, more populist government to what we had before. So it could be that they're not going to be thinking about it logically at all. But assuming they are looking at the economy, I think if they do anything that sweeping that will, I mean, you're looking at properties like this one that we just looked at for 50,000, 40,000 bucks. If they completely prevent those rural markets from moving forward, that's going to be shooting themselves in the foot big time, I think. So I'm hope, but I don't have a
crystal. Japan has been known to shoot themselves in the foot.
yes, I know. So I'm hoping that's not going to be anything too major, but yeah, anyone's guess at this point.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know if there was anything more concrete
Nothing concrete yet, media
or anything like that. I'm curious. So all the years that I was growing up there, we actually, my family rented a house for 24 years, the same house. And my parents would have loved to buy it, but our understanding back then was foreigners weren't allowed to buy property. And then did something change or were we mistaken? Do you know if there was a change in the law at some point? We left in 2006.
That sounds like a job for ChatGPT, but I wasn't aware to research it.
Yeah, I have Googled it and I can't find like, oh, new law in Japan allows foreigners to buy property. We had heard maybe something changed after we left, but that's just kind of like hearsay at the time. I don't have any concrete evidence.
While we're chatting, I will try to research that. But we were in business from 2011, and it's always been freehold, no restrictions. Mm-hmm. So if it has come into effect, it was before then.
Yeah.
By non-residents in
Japan. We may have just had, you know, bad info. And obviously, we were there in the 80s and the 90s, so partly before the bubble burst. And, you know, Japanese people had 100-year mortgages, and property was expensive, and so it wasn't even maybe.
No, but that was an economic bubble. I mean, property kind of drove it, but that was an economic bubble that the entire country in all sectors and segments suffered from. I don't think that had anything. And none was ever from purchasing landed property in Japan since World War II. Let's ask. I don't know. Give him a minute. I wouldn't take anything ChatGPT says as gospel, but
yeah.
Okay, now he's thinking about it. That'll take a few. Generally, doesn't restrict post-war. There were some land security bills, but no general prohibition. Almost done. Somebody must be watching this recording now and say, of course, don't you know about the blah, 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 blah.
Tell us in the comments below.
Yes,
if you know the answer.
I'm thinking we'll get a no or a very nuanced, maybe a little bit yes, but basically no. But I'll let you know as soon as it spits out the answer.
Since none of the foreigners in any of our circles ever purchased property or thought about it or talked about it, and are, you know, I was always just told, oh, foreigners can't own property in Japan, and then suddenly in the most recent years I'm like, oh, well, obviously they can.
Again, it was completely freehold. I mean, there are some areas near military bases and in historical districts that are off limits, but normally no. I mean, maybe 1-5% of the land in Japan is leasehold, and that's usually the case with agricultural land, where the farmer builds a house to rent but wants to make sure that, you know, the land is his.
Yeah.
But otherwise, no, not as far as I'm aware, but I'll let you know if I get... Oh, okay. Short answer. Over the last 100 years, there have been a few legal changes, but mostly in the direction of relaxing controls. Never been a blanket prohibition since the end of World War II. So pre-war, 1925. So since 1925, where they enacted the Foreign Land Act, everybody has been in principle entitled to land ownership, barring restrictions in specific areas designated as important for national defense. And since 1980, there's been some screening, which is, it's funny because now everyone's saying, oh, now you have to report all of your purchases to the Bank of Japan if you're a non-resident, and they're clamping down. That law has been in effect since we've been in business, just nobody actually enforced it. So we were always reporting every non-resident purchase to the Bank of Japan, and most of the agents that we work with were never aware that that was even a law. So now they're actually enforcing it. That's the only difference. Foreign exchange and foreign trade law from the 1980s. Yeah, that's when the prior notification system for certain foreign investments, including land. But that's notification. And since the 80s, very liberal ownership rules. 2021, there were some regulations put in around, again, bases and some remote islands. So otherwise, no, that's never been a thing.
Well, we just had bad info. It's too bad we couldn't put all that rent payment towards the house. Then I wouldn't have this problem now.
I get people approaching me with stuff that they read on Reddit that makes me scratch my head. And I know.
Yeah. I mean, until I started listening to your podcast, it never occurred to me that you could even consider investing in property in Japan. And so that was really interesting to me at the beginning. I thought, well, maybe I'm not wealthy enough to own a second home or a vacation home. Maybe I should just consider purchasing a, you know, investment property, because that is something I'm interested in doing, you know, financially in the future.
Well, here my sister just purchased her first. It's a cash flow play though, right? You're not buying for huge leaps and gains and flipping it for a profit in 5 years' time. Right. Yeah. Although it might happen depending on where we buy.
It'd be a way to diversify my investments, because I'm already, you know, doing my retirement investments. Those are fully funded. So it's, what do I do with the extra cash as an investment that's something other than the US stock market?
Well, it's nice. So. It's nice, safe and stable, and will get you, as long as we're not getting super creative and we want to be semi-passive, it's going to get you somewhere between 4 to 6.5, 7%-ish.
Mm-hmm. Which in the US now, like my sister just purchased an investment property in Oklahoma City of all places, but that's one of the few places where you can get yield in the US right now with rents compared to housing costs. And even there, they're looking at only about 4% for the yield. Okay. And that's about as good as it gets. But initially about a year ago, I was like, well, maybe I should just go that route, you know, buy a condo unit and have it and not have a vacation property, but just, you know, have a foot in the door. But I guess my main concern with that right now is the exchange rate, and it's cheap to buy the property.
You mentioned in your email that it crashed from 160 to 140 something, but I mean, most of the time I've been in business, it's been under 100. So this was actually still pretty high. But I mean, the mindset around foreign exchange, in my view at least, should not be related to what it is at the moment and where it was a month ago. It's more a case of when you're actually withdrawing funds and when you're transferring funds over, right? So if I know that I want to buy something within this year, then I'll start looking at the rates, and then I'll always look 3 months backwards. And when I see a peak is when I'll withdraw income or put in income, right? I mean, I don't try to time it beyond that, because that's anyone's guess.
And then I just feel like with an exchange rate of like 150, if you're trying to convert any yen to dollars, you're losing so much right now.
Compared to what?
Well, I mean, if it was 1-to-1 again, then you wouldn't be losing so much. But
do you know if it'll get there? I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, I guess so. I just thought, okay, so maybe I'm making like sanman profit off of a condo unit, but if I decide I want to take that money out of Japan, now it's only worth like $200, right?
Yeah, so. I mean, it's kind of like you're in stock, so it's kind of similar. Like if I look at what's Netflix been doing in the last 3-4 months, then oh my god, I've lost 10%, but I actually bought into it when it was 800. Will it ever go down to 800 again? I don't know. Who knows? All I can do is look at this, you know, the near period of time and try to factor my transfers based on that. So when you purchase, if it's at 150, then when you withdraw your income, when you resell it, that would be the time to think about what it is compared to what you bought it in dollar terms. And then you can think about whether you're leaving the money in Japan and buying a different asset in Japanese yen, or if you're withdrawing it because it's now gained you a bit of an income on the exchange rate. I would look at it in a future and past tense, but not as far back as what it used to be, because I never know if it'll go back there again or not. It's kind of like thinking, will it ever go to 200? It might.
That would be for shopping purposes. I mean, I was just there, and it's like everything in the country is 50% off right now.
Yeah, but it's not going to be nice if you want to withdraw your income back home. It's not that nice
anymore,
right?
That's why I hesitate to have income coming from there from an investment property. So
I wouldn't treat it as income in the sense of, you know, stuff that you'll be withdrawing regularly and paying your bills with. I treat it as you do with investments. You park it there until such a time when it's profitable to then withdraw or liquidate or flip over to something else. I wouldn't count anything that involves foreign exchange. I wouldn't count on for any regular payments of anything, because you never know what the rates will do.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know. They're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own. But longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home, with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku, or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today. See how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now back to the podcast.
So I think you usually tell people if they're making a purchase to expect about 15% for purchase costs. Does that seem...
If you're buying super cheap, like that last house, like if you're talking about somewhere under 5-6 million yen, then it could creep up to maybe 20-ish, 18-ish. The 15% is more meant for the average kind of 10 million yen purchase that most people are making, or most of our clients anyway.
Okay, so more like 20% in this price range.
Hopefully 16 to 18, but potentially a little bit more than 15, yeah.
Okay. I know a couple of your guests in the past have talked about trying to have a car in Japan, licensed. Have people done that successfully that you know of?
Yeah, since we found out that it's even possible, because everyone's saying it's not possible. So we've had about a dozen or so cases, and they've all been successful. Some of them took a lot more work because that rural municipality didn't actually realize that the national law allows it. So we have to kind of educate them on the fact that, yes, it is allowed. And here is some documents that other municipalities have asked for that purpose. And then they'll draw up their own list of what they want the documents to look like. But we always get there. Yeah.
Let's see, what other questions do I have?
But you do need to have a designated parking spot that's on a either yours or on a long-term, at least 1 year rental lease.
How do you tell on those condo listings about the parking? It does it, I didn't see it like listed.
Sometimes it's mentioned, sometimes not. It's a case of contacting the building management company or the owner union and finding out. They always have some parking spaces, but they, depending on location and how busy they are and how many units are occupied, they might all be rented out. So it's
Like the
either
one that
that.
was so many units probably doesn't have very many parking spaces for 100
Oh,
and
it
some
looks like
units.
a big the thing is, it really depends on what units are in the building. So normally family-sized units would have parking spots allocated to them. If it's all studio or one bedroom on the first, let's say, four floors, and only the top one or two floors are family-sized units, there could only be 10 of them, and in that case they might be available. But if not, there's always going to be, normally within maximum 10, 15 walking distance, there would be a monthly parking lot where you could just rent a spot. I mean, from the building, you'll also need to rent your spot from the building as well. It doesn't come with the property. You have to pay for it.
Yeah, extra.
Yeah.
So as far as like calculating my annual ongoing expenses for a property, I actually was listening, and so the Akia Hub guys said that they had like some sort of calculator if you have a subscription to their website for, I know for sure it was for your like purchase cost, but it sounded like they had a calculator to calculate your ongoing costs on there.
Akia Hub guys, or on our podcast? Where did you hear that?
No, the Akia Hub guys, when they were on the summit, they were talking about like a new calculator they had on their website.
I'm not familiar with that one, so I'd ask them for it. But we've got calculators for investment properties, so we know what you're paying monthly fee, we know what the rental income is, so we've got calculators for that. But with houses, if the house is newish, let's say 20 years and less, I can give you an expense calculator. But once it gets older, then it comes and goes. I mean, it'll be, you probably heard this on the podcast too, it'll be okay for 5, 6 years, then the roof goes. So I can give you rough estimates, but I'd say 10% once it hits about 10% of the, but that's rental. I'm working off rentals again. We normally say, on average, I mean conservative average, but something like 2 to 3, sorry, 200, I shouldn't speak in dollars because it's not 100 anymore, so between 2 to 300,000 yen if it's, let's say, 35 to 45 or 50, and then more like 300,000 to 400,000 on average if it's 45 and above. But those are very, very rough estimates. I can't really say. Wooden structures here are very, very iffy and fluctuate a lot. And the typhoons and the earthquakes, and there's so much stuff that goes into it. But your insurance covers some of it, but not all of it.
I mean, in general, like the tile roofs last a long time. They're a lot longer than our shingle roofs do in the US, but I'm, when it goes, it's going to be expensive. It might last 50 years, but
On your typical single family home, I wouldn't say they last 50 years. You'll have to start patching them up around 35, 40. And if it's an area that's prone to typhoons, probably a bit sooner than that. But an entire roof replacement for a single family home will be somewhere between 1.5 million to 4 million yen, depending on how big it is. So that's, I mean, that's a big expense, but it's still one of the quantifiable ones. I'm more concerned with tilting, sinking, termites, and how deep they got into the wood, land sediment issues. That's the stuff that can cost several times the price of the property when you're looking at something this cheap.
Mean, I haven't ever heard of any of my friends' houses doing that, that live in like normal neighborhoods.
Either
Like they
renting
haven't.
or do they own?
No, well, just renting or, well, I mean, even Japanese friends, I haven't heard of them having like major structural issues in
Again,
their neighborhood. Maybe if you're
renting
in
or
your
home,
farm
renting
area.
or homeowners.
Both,
Well, the
I think.
renters wouldn't know about it, and the landlords would never do a structural inspection when there's a tenant in there, so they don't know about it either. And for property owners, depending on if they bought new or if they bought 20 years or younger, or if they bought 40, 50 years of younger, and also depends on whether they ever bother to check, right? So
Because I guess they tend to tear the house down after 50 years anyway.
So. Exactly. So nobody, I think we had maybe two houses that we helped people buy that anyone ever conducted a structural inspection report on before we came along. And that was just because there was a real estate company selling it and they did a renovation. So they also wanted to know what the structure is like. Like owners, occupiers, or even people renting out would almost never do a structural inspection in Japan. So they don't know what the property's up to. They'll only notice if something actually happens and, oh, what's happening to the wall? Why is it such a big crack? And even then they often don't do it.
My other thought in condos is it's easier to resell a condo. I don't know, you know, in this Yamaguchi Prefecture has one of the highest vacancy rates in the country. So as far as abandoned homes go, so unloading a single family home could be potentially difficult, whereas a condo may be easier.
I mean, if it's new and in a good location, I'd say it wouldn't be a big issue, but condos are a very liquid market.
There's not very many. When I was on Akia Mart looking under the condos tab, there's very few in the area. I was surprised. I thought more would come up, and I'm wondering if they're not getting all of the listings for that.
I haven't looked on Akia Mart for condos specifically in a while, but in the past they were definitely finding a lot more houses than they were condos. I would look at are you comfortable with the Japanese websites at all? Like Sumo
at
Home?
I mean, I can translate it to, I can translate it if I want to do that. So you think I'll find more if I go direct to Sumo?
I'm pretty sure you'll find more. Yeah. Okay. And if you're looking at investment properties specifically, Kenbia and Rakumachi definitely have a lot of condos on there because they're investor geared and that's usually the asset class of choice. I mean, condo units and small buildings, but usually single family homes would not be investment properties. So those two websites have a lot of them. Yeah. If you remind me via email, I'll send you a list of all the property websites that we normally look at.
Okay. So I will be back there in April again for a couple of weeks.
Okay.
So my plan is to talk to friends and family and try to figure things out more concretely on what might work. The whole, would a friend want to live in the property route versus just vacation property? And if I have people willing to go in on it with me, or if it's just going to be my cash only. So,
okay. Well, if there is somebody who can take care of it for you, that's going to save you a good few $100 a month. So definitely.
Because I think your fee for medium management was like $1,000, $3,000.
No, that's for investment properties where we have a property manager and we don't have to worry about doing anything ourselves. For holiday homes, our minimum is 16 or about 17,000 yen per month.
17,000 a month. Okay.
And if it's a condo, then we have to unfortunately double that because dealing with the owner union is a pain in the bum. That takes another 2 hours of our time every month, roughly.
Yeah. So if I had, somebody who was able to manage it for me, obviously that would be.
Yep. Yeah.
Cost savings. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. But for investment properties, we just charge about $40 a month or something like that.
Okay. Well, I think that's where I stand right now. I mean, I'd really love to still to have a place to call home because it's still home. Like when I go back, it's still home 100%. So,
yeah.
I mean, I have a great place to live in the US and I have a job I love here. So I will, and unfortunately, like I have no way to live in Japan visa wise. Cause they just don't want us there. So
you mentioned your Japanese descendant, no?
No.
Sorry, I thought you were born in Japan because you were living on the base. Oh, okay, got it.
Yeah. And we weren't actually living on the base, so we didn't actually have base privileges or work or live on the base. I was born in a Japanese hospital and lived in a Japanese house and everything, but...
But no Japanese ancestry.
No. And no dual citizenship if you're born there, like in the US. So.
Oh, that's a shame. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, there are ways to get in here, but again, they're not making it easier.
No, it's hard. So, I mean, my sister would really like to live there. And we've looked into all the ways to try and figure it out. We'll probably contact the immigration lawyer at some point and see if there's any way to do it, but
The ways to do it is, assuming you're not marrying a Japanese spouse, the ways to do it would be to set up a business here. That's the only one I'm aware of. And now
they
they've
just made
made
that a
it.
whole lot harder.
Yes. So that's a lot of savings on something. I mean, we got a lot of people doing it, but that's definitely more of a gamble than property investment. And
We lived
the
there long enough. We could have had permanent residency had we applied for it, but obviously as a kid, I wasn't thinking about that. And then as a young adult, even if we had gotten it, I wouldn't have had the means to come back often enough to keep it up at the beginning. So we probably would have lost it anyway, but it's a shame that we couldn't get it and keep that, because that would have been our way in the door, fortunately. So
And just thinking out loud, sorry, just had a thought before you start talking about the visa. You're coming back in April, and then you're gonna talk to friends and consider your route. Because if you want to park your money in Japan before that, you can just buy an investment property, but then you might not have enough for both, I'm assuming, right?
yeah, no. But I am thinking about coming to the summit in the spring, because I will be there on those dates. So,
Oh, please, please do. Would love to see you there.
yeah. So we could
Awesome.
figure out our schedule and timeline. But if I can be in Tokyo on the 18th and 19th, I'd like to come. So,
That'd be great. Looking forward to seeing you face to face.
yeah.
And if you, regardless, if you're going to be in Yamaguchi, that's not too far from Fukuoka, so we can definitely
Oh,
catch up
yeah.
for lunch or a coffee or
Definitely.
what.
We used to, when they first put Costco in Fukuoka, we used to drive there to go to Costco.
Really?
Yeah.
I've been there twice in my entire life. I try not to own a
Oh.
car, and Costco without a car is kind of pointless, so.
Yeah, no. So believe it or not, we had the big Hiace van, the biggest car you can buy in Japan. That's what I learned to drive on. That's what we had. So, yeah. If I can drive that in Japan, I should be able to drive anything just about anywhere. But,
Yeah, just don't try to get into any of the side streets with
I mean, you get a sixth sense for where your mirrors are, and
that.
you learn how to be in small spaces. So,
Awesome.
anyway.
We're looking forward to meeting you.
Okay. Well, thanks for meeting with me.
Pleasure. Talk to you soon.
All right. Okay.
Bye
Bye.
bye. So there you have it. So she's looking at two potential, but quite different purchase options there, or three if you count the condo versus houses discussion. And as Annette mentioned, she's also planning to come to the summit in April if she can make it. And you're, of course, also more than welcome to come and meet her, myself, and all of our other guest speakers and sponsors in person, or online via the stream. That's next month, 18th and 19th April. Grab your tickets today at summit.realestate.jp. Now, we can't let you go without telling you all about Yen Loans, our latest sponsor. They're a new non-bank lender offering financing to non-residents of Japan for purchases of Tokyo condominiums, soon to be expanding to other major cities as well. So definitely hit them up if you're looking to purchase in Osaka, Fukuoka, Kyoto, or any other big city too. And that's for any purpose, whether it's a holiday home, investment rental, or a combination of both, without any requirement for residency, a Japanese bank account, a Japanese corporate structure, or representative director, any of these things, and with a streamlined application process too. So reach out to them through the link in our show notes and let them know that you found them on the Japan Real Estate Podcast. And if you're quick enough to be one of the first 10 completed applications, you'll receive a 25% discount. That's 50,000 yen off the 200,000 yen application fee. To qualify, apply through the link in our show notes again, or enter the code JREYL on their website, yenloans.com. And that's it from us for this episode, folks. Huge thank you for tuning in. Please do follow and subscribe to the show if this is your first time listening, and we'd love it if you could like and even share this episode with anyone you think might find interest in it. But even more importantly, we love hearing from you. So please let us know what you thought about this episode or the podcast overall in the comments section here on our social media channels. We've got a very active Facebook group and business page, both under the name Japan Real Estate on Facebook. And that's also the name and URL of our YouTube channel if you'd like to follow us there, Japan Real Estate on YouTube as well. And we'd of course appreciate your rating or review on Spotify or on the Apple Store or wherever you're tuning in from. Hope to have you with us again. Have a great rest of the day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.